The following presentation was recorded at a Christian Light Education workshop. More information at clp.org.
This is a session on dealing with disrespect respectfully. We've been talking about respect last evening and again today. We've been talking about respecting God, each other. Sometimes students don't show respect. And it's quite a challenge for us to respond properly so that we don't respond to disrespect with more disrespect. You don't fight fire with fire in that way. I'd like to begin by maybe a bit of a vocabulary lesson here and by defining a few words. The first one being respect itself. If you checked it out, you would find that the re has to do with again. And spec has to do with spectacle, with seeing. It's sometimes if you see something that surprises you, we say you do a double take. You look at something, and then you look away, and then it strikes your mind, did I actually see what I thought I saw? And then you look back again, and you see, oh, yes, it was. You do a double take. Well, if you respect, you look again. You don't just glance at. You look at something. Also, a synonym for it is to show regard or deferential regard. If you regard something, you give attention to something. You consider something. You pay attention to it. You heed it. If you disregard something, you pass it by, pay no attention. If you regard, you do give heed to it. And a third term related to this is esteem. When you esteem something, you are placing an estimate on it, of its value. You're appraising it in a sense. And so you're estimating, you're appraising. As you think of respecting, we're thinking then of having a healthy regard, giving a respectable, healthy attention to something, and placing a proper esteem on this or to this person or situation. If you disrespect, of course, it's the opposite of that. You really don't pay attention, you don't esteem it worthwhile, you don't regard it, and you just act irregardless of that situation or that person. I'd like to force you to think a bit first about some possible root problems of disrespect. When there's a problem, it does help us to consider the roots. Many times we're likely to treat symptoms, and that has short-term results sometimes, but to get at the root for the long term. And so one of the things to consider is ongoing or long-term things. Sometimes we say it's baggage that children bring with them to school, things that they live with that cause behavior that is disrespectful. And this does not excuse the behavior nor justify the behavior, but it helps us to understand that maybe the student isn't really planning, doesn't really want to be disrespectful, but is nevertheless. One of the things to consider is that when you are in pain, it's very difficult for any of us to act or especially respond properly when you're in pain. If you've just hit your thumb with a hammer and someone says, could you please describe to me the difference between a noun clause and an adverb clause, it would take a very charitable person to respond respectfully to such a question. In fact, you would probably say, you should know better than to ask me a question like that when I've just smashed my thumb. The problem is really yours. You shouldn't have asked me the question. And I think we could almost agree, yes, if we had discretion and someone is experiencing that kind of pain, you know better. You back off. You don't ask them that kind of a question when they're experiencing great pain. And so one of the things for us to consider is it possible that this child is living with a chronic or pain? And there are many things that pain children in their lives. And I have a few of them listed on your paper here. One of them is their emotional pain, pain in the heart, the mind, whatever you want to call it, emotional pain or turmoil can really, it can cause adults to be dysfunctional, let alone children. So problems at home, there are all kinds of problems that they may experience at home, various kinds of abuse, sickness, maybe another child in the family who, for whatever reason, requires tremendous amounts of attention from the parents, and everybody else has given this other child attention. Maybe the other child is sick. Maybe there's a legitimate reason why the other child needs attention, and this child is not getting attention. There are all kinds of things like that that the child may be experiencing at home that cause so much pain that the child's almost dysfunctional at school. And then especially if the tasks they have to do are difficult, yet on top of that, then we have the learning challenge, and then we have this pain that they're living with. They're coming to school with a smashed thumb, if you will, and they're supposed to diagram sentences. And then, of course, there are problems at school. And now these the teacher should be more alert to. Maybe there's a clique problem, and this child's outside the clique, or maybe the child is in the clique and feels bad about it. Maybe there's trouble happening on the playground. Maybe there are learning difficulties. And there can be personal problems. The child feels I'm worthless, I'm dumb, I'm guilty, or whatever. And when a person is living with ongoing distress, it's a bit like an animal being caught in a trap, even though it's your well-known pet. If that pet's caught in a leg trap, you know, it's not the easiest thing to release them from the trap. They're very likely to bite you, even though you're there to let them out. And so it's not surprising. It shouldn't surprise us if children who are distressed for whatever reason respond disrespectfully when we expect them to be orderly, to be quiet, to sit and listen, to write neatly, to sit up, to be on time, and all these things we expect in school. It shouldn't be a surprise if they don't respond with in a what we would say is a healthy, respectful way. Now, I'm not saying then, after what I've said, you might say, well, then what child could function in school? Well, people are actually very resilient. And the old statement that when it's tough, the tough get going. When the going gets tough, the tough get going. We've discussed this a number of times in the school that it almost seems, contrary to Maslow's hierarchy of needs, where you have to have all these things in place before you can learn more difficult things. It would almost seem that in many cases, the challenge to rise above circumstances is a motivation to achieve in the face of hardship. And I would suggest that many times the teacher is not in a position where you can change these situations at home or in the child's life. But if you at least are, and you might not be aware of the details, but if the child knows that you care, I'm reminded of the child who hurt his knee, skinned his knee or something, and then he went to his dad, and his dad really just said, you know, let's get on with pulling weeds, or whatever the task was. And the child thought, well, you could have at least said, oh. You could have at least said, oh. And then we could go on and pull weeds. In other words, you could at least acknowledge that there is a difficulty here. And if the child knows that you care, and that especially if it's a situation that you as a teacher do know about that makes it difficult for the child, it isn't that you are pretending as a child to just be able to make a stiff upper lip and just go ahead, but that there are difficult things in life. It is difficult to learn. There are things we have to face, but I'm here to help you, and we will work together at this. This is easy to stand here and say this, I know, but nevertheless, it is a beginning point to have the child feel that I'm with you in this, and we will work together in the face of this difficulty. Well, there are other things like habitual habits the child has developed. A child who's easily distracted, daydreams, has poor work habits, and sometimes if a child is It's constantly distracted, and we've all had them. Students who every little noise they hear is equally attractive to them as every other noise, and maybe even more so than the teacher's voice, because that little sound they heard has to be identified as to who made it and what's going on over there in the teacher's voice. I can listen to it any time I want to, because that's going on all the time. And so these distractions, that these habits they've developed of daydreaming or being distracted, sometimes when we expect them then to perform, have your work done before recess or you don't go out, sometimes they can feel that you're asking me to do something that is unreasonable. Now, if we were practicing high jumping here, and I set up the 7-foot bar and said, "You practice, you will jump over this bar before you go out for recess," I'm guessing that many of you would might as well not try. What's the use? You're asking me to do something I can't do. And you have to, as a teacher, you have to know whether or not you are asking something that's unreasonable or not. If in fact you're asking something that's unreasonable, don't be surprised if a child responds disrespectfully. I don't know what you would do if I was a teacher and you were, let's suppose this is an adult class, and I ask you to memorize Matthew 5 and 6 and 7 before supper this evening. You say, "Yeah, I can't have heard that. He can't have said that. I mean, that's just not reasonable. That's not possible." So be sure that the child might feel that you're asking something that he can't do. And given his patterns of thinking, given the way he is easily distracted or does daydream, he may need, he or she may need to break some habits before they can learn. So sometimes we have to discern what the blockage is here. And when a child responds disrespectfully, we need to ponder, really, don't assume that the child is being outrightly rebellious or doesn't like you, but rather ponder what might be the cause here. And so with this B item here, try to identify, if there is a problem here, help the child identify the problem and then help them in some way. You're easily distracted, and so we'll sit in the corner where you can work, where you're not distracted by visual things or something. And then sometimes we could say it's attitude with C there. Sometimes a child comes to school with an attitude that school is a waste of time, especially when you get beyond about grade 6. It's something you kind of have to do because you have to go to school, or maybe the community really doesn't value school that much. And here, as a teacher, you're trying to teach people something that they don't think is all that important. And if I try to teach you all now how to subtract and base 2, what's the big deal? Why are we doing this? And so it wouldn't surprise any of us if we're trying to teach our students to do something that they feel is insignificant, unimportant. Would we be surprised if they act disrespectfully when we give them an assignment? Another one is relationship problems. As a teacher-student relationship problems, whether there is a real problem. If I have a pet in the class, or if I have some other personal thing that I do improperly in the way I treat students, there won't be a relationship problem. If a student thinks that that's the case, if you as a student think that I don't like you, you will respond to me pretty much the same way you would if I didn't like you. You get that? Your perception of how I treat you is what really affects how you respond to me. And so sometimes it's your relationship situation. And as teachers, we need to be alert to that, and especially be alert to things that we do that would, in fact, make it difficult for a student to respect us. And of course, sometimes students come to school with habits from home that simply make it difficult for them to function in school. Some Some find it difficult to take direction from anybody, to be told anything. And it's amazing how sometimes parents don't recognize this at home. Maybe a child takes 10 seconds longer every time when it's time to get out the books or turn to a page, why he makes sure that she's the last one. Or I do it when I'm ready. I do it on my time, not on your time. Attitudes like this need to be recognized and in many cases simply need to be trained out of them. They need to be trained to function along with the group. Well, those are some possible root problems. I'm not suggesting they're all the root problems, but we get the point here that there can be situations in a student's life that as we work with them in the challenging tasks of learning in school, which are hard to learn new math concepts. And of course, school consists of problems, problem after problem. As soon as the morning exercises are over and you go into the day, the first thing I do is give you some problems. If you solve them, I give you some more. And that's what school consists of. And so since school involves solving math problems, studying grammar, and so forth, it's a challenge to begin with. We can expect that the stresses they bring with them to school are going to compound the problem. Well, let's look at some disrespectful behavior that must be dealt with, some examples of things that must be dealt with. Don't expect these things to go away. The first one here, complaining, criticizing assignments or activities planned by teachers or talking back. Simply complaining, grumbling. It's important as a teacher to recognize grumbling when you hear it, to recognize that children left to themselves will slip into these habits, into these patterns. I just heard someone recently giving a scenario where he must have made some comment with his students, something to the extent that I'm, as a teacher, I'm responsible for you. This was on the playground. I'm responsible if someone gets hurt. And he said a few days later, the children were playing out front, and he heard one student saying to another one, "Yeah, you must be careful because I'm responsible for you." Now, you and their children, don't you? And you recognize there's a problem here. But it's not a new problem. This is simply a predictable kind of thing that comes with childhood. But as a teacher, if you hear something like that, you know that there is a problem. But how to deal with that takes wisdom. And so being alert, complaining children will complain. It doesn't matter whether it's, there'll be something, whether it's a game that's picked or whether it's an assignment, it'd be too big, too short, too easy, too hard, whatever. And you need to recognize these things and deal with them. I'll go over this list first and then talk about some approaches to it. Secondly, is any kind of mocking or belittling or putting down, finding fault with what I call others. And others are anybody who is different, anybody who's in another group. So in a school, it could be the other room. It could be children in a younger room, the little children. Or it could be, if you're reading in a history book, people of a different time period or people of a different ethnic group, people of a different background. If you're reading current events, it could be people in different parts of the world. And you need to be alert to children feeling, expressing that they are better or that these others get what they have coming or worth less or whatever. Be alert to that kind of thing and name the problem for what it is. And when things happen in the presence of the group that everybody hears it, don't be afraid to also rebuke it in the presence of the group when everybody hears it and call mocking for what it is and say we don't want to put anybody down or mock anybody. We simply do not do that. And there's the body language kind of thing, the willfully slouching or foot dragging behavior, or mumbling when you could speak up. Avoiding certain classmates, operating in cliques, having a pecking order. And don't be afraid to point out to children that if you have some hens in a hen house, you can ask them, did you ever see hens in a hen house? You know, they're up there eating, and there isn't quite room at the trough for all of them there, and they just literally go and peck and chase other ones away and say, do you know what? We have that same kind of behavior in us. And if we're not alert to it, we will do the same thing. And we put other people down and look up to others, and it just isn't right. It isn't godly. It isn't Christ-like. You don't do that. And also remember, in cases of respect or disrespect, it's also shown by stewardship, by the way you handle things, by the way you care for the school property, by the way you open closed doors or use paper towels or lay down your school books or place them in your desk. Not that you are harping on them about this, but you respect is a broad thing, just the way you handle things. Well, so we have these things we need to deal with. How do we deal with them? First of all, pray. There is, if we take seriously being Christians, we do pray. And God does promise wisdom. He'll give liberally. And he won't upbraid. And if we are teachers, if you're responsible for a group, and you hear some behavior, you're overhearing some things, you're going to have to do something. And pray for wisdom. And he will give you wisdom in what to do. I can't give you a formula here. Dealing with attitudes and habits are some of the most difficult things you have to deal with as a teacher, but God can give wisdom. Recognize that God is present with you and claim these promises that he will give you wisdom. I might say also, don't depend on students' behavior to get you, or don't let it get you down. That is, you shouldn't feel really, really successful and good if all goes well, and really, really poor and down if all does not go well. Because it isn't necessarily, when things all go well, it isn't necessarily a sign that you're a good teacher. And when things don't go so well, it isn't necessarily a sign that you're a poor teacher. You serve the Lord, and you have your blessing and confirmation from Him. There are times that you have students that will be disrespectful, and they're not going to change overnight. They might not change at all. And don't assume that if you just push the right buttons and do the right things that they will improve. You do want to do the right things, but children are not machines. They are people, and they can make their decisions. And you can't assume that if you just do the right thing, all will be well, or if all is well, you did the right thing. Do a self-check. Make sure you're loving your students. Make sure you're loving them. If you don't, if you find yourself thinking, boy, if only Jack would be absent tomorrow, we could have a wonderful day. If you find yourself secretly wishing somebody would be absent or glad that somebody's absent, well, pray that the Lord would turn your hearts to the students, that you can love them all. That is a beginning point, an ongoing point. Also, learn to like them. Liking is more of a feeling, and students know very well whether you like them. They know very well whether you respect them, whether you have hope for them. Be consistent, consider root causes. Don't wait for problems to go away. They usually will not go away. A book that, I'm not sure if Brother Pete referred to this or not, but here's a book that came in the market just a couple of years ago. You can get it through Association of Christian Schools International, and let me look at it up here if you want. It, with all due respect, is a title, and they have an interesting thesis in here, and it's simply that respect is something you must teach. We teach science, we teach math, we teach history, we teach English, and they say, how many schools, if you ask them, what's your scope and sequence for teaching respect? I say, what? You just kind of hope that they come to school acting respectful and having good manners, but you don't expect that they come to school necessarily knowing their math and science. And so One of the reasons that we don't have more respect is simply that we don't teach it. Let me just read a couple of things here. It says that unless students are taught how to behave appropriately, they will not do so. The discovery approach to discipline does not work. And then there's a little list here. It says, here's some questions to help clarify your picture of how your students will behave. How will your students speak to you? What tone of voice will your students use when they speak to you? Will your students listen to you when you are speaking? How will they disagree with you or others? Do your students know how to disagree with you as a teacher? Did you ever tell them that? Sometime this year I may explain something to you and you might think it's really not correct. And if you don't think it's correct, you ought to let me know that somehow. And there's a proper way to let me know and there's an improper way to let me know. Have you ever told them how to disagree with you without being disrespectful? If you haven't, don't be surprised if they're disrespectful. How will your students deal with losing? How are they supposed to act when they lose or come in second or go to the end of the line? Have you taught them? Do they know what your expectations are? How will they invite others into their games? There's a list there. And basically, they say that students need to be taught this. You teach them. All right, and so going to your list here, teach respect quite a bit. Don't assume they recognize what's disrespectful. Don't assume that students know what's disrespectful. Many a young child comes to school, and you may raise, suppose you're the teacher. Second grade raises his hand and says, come here and help me with this problem. I can't get the answer. You wouldn't be surprised to hear a young child say that. Is that the way they should talk to you? Well, no, but you would have to, and if you respond and say, don't talk to me like that, they may have no idea what you're talking about. Or if you write something on the board and then proceed to block the view by staying in front of it, which you shouldn't do, of course, and Jason raises his hand and says, you should move, I can't see that. He just stood in front. Does he have any idea how that sounds? He might not. Especially with younger children. It is amazing what children do not know what tone of voice that they're speaking in. They do not know what it sounds like to give a command to a teacher. They need to be taught. So teach them. You may have to model it. Teach them your expectations. And you might get into some examples and say, if you don't know how to do something, don't say, Miss Smith, come here and help me. I can't do this problem. Don't say it like that. But rather raise your hand and say, I can't do problem six. Could you help me? Or let them know what you expect. And then, of course, they'll probably need to be trained. Telling them one time, there are very few of us learn something like that from hearing it one time or even two times. So you have to train them. And maintain the dignity of the person. Never belittle them. Never have a child feel when he or she does something that's disrespectful that you must deal with. Never should they feel that they are a bad person because of this or that you're attacking the person. It's the behavior here. It's the way you spoke. Now, obviously, that works backwards into the heart, but we're talking here about how they speak. Name the sin. It's amazing how with young children we can talk about things like bullying or mocking or fault finding or making fun or whatever, but you want to be sure that they know what you're talking about when you say that. So you might have to give an illustration, or if something happens particular in class, then you can point it out and name this thing so they know what we're talking about when we say being procrastinating or mocking or whatever. And sometimes children really are frustrated and say, I can never do anything that's right. Well, invite them to share that and feel with them, and sometimes they really feel that way. I am never going to be able to. Everybody's always telling me I can never do anything right. And that's really how they feel. And somehow get next to them and share that you care, and encourage them that you're there to help them. Let them know what you expect. I'm intrigued by the passage in the Bible that says that Enoch had this testimony that he pleased God. And our students often find out when we're not pleased with the way they act. Do they know when we are pleased? Have you ever pointed out after a game or after a review time or after a class that we had a good discussion here, we had good contributions, or after a game, you pointing out some things that happened well? Do they know when they reach a level that you are pleased with? And then as you are helping a person to overcome his habits or her habits, encourage them. Let them know how they're doing. And there's a time to discuss the issues with parents also. Parents don't want you to call every day, every time there's a little incident, a little problem. But if there's something, an ongoing thing, if there's a chronic problem, do share it with parents. They certainly also do not want you to wait 2 or 3 months and say, we've been having this thing, I don't know what to do, and I'm about at the end of it. Well, you should have talked to them long before that. There does come a time that a child does need to be removed. If a child is truly a scorner and just will not receive correction, will not change, the influence on the group can be devastating, and sometimes a child does need to be suspended or removed. But in conclusion, I would like to remind us again that respect must be taught. Then also it must be trained. Children need our help. Children need our help to do that, and they need encouragement. And we can't wait for it to happen. We can't assume that it will just happen as you grow up. And the Lord will give you the wisdom you need for your situation back home in your classroom right now. If you ask Him, He will give you direction. And that's a promise you can claim. And as you move forward, trusting in faith, he is able and will turn the hearts of children to teachers and teachers to children and parents to children and children to parents. He will honor that if we take Him in His word.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.